I'm Ken Best, editor of UConn Magazine. Robin Barnes is a constitutional law professor in the UConn School of Law and is a national and international speaker on issues related to democracy, free speech, privacy, and human rights. Her new book, Outrageous Invasions, Celebrities' Private Lives, Media, and the Law, published by Oxford University Press, examines how the frenzy of celebrity news in tabloid publications and on television continues to grow and its potential long-term effects on privacy. We began our conversation by discussing why this should be of concern to the public.
We've got sort of a crisis of confidence in terms of our government going on at this point. And it's not that we haven't always had reason to be concerned, but if you think about the fundamental principle of the surrounding freedom of speech and freedom of press, we have these very strong protections and we have them for a reason. We hang our hat on that. That's part of our national identity. We're considered the sort of oldest living democracy, and sort of what we do is important because we lead the way for other people. So we've got these strong protections, and the reality is there was a period of time when they were strengthened even more in terms of where we went from the original amendment to the sort of evolution of the press clause in particular. And a very strong freedom, protection was about securing the press as the fourth estate, the ability to go in and have yet a fourth sort of checks and balance on the system to focus on government and big business, and particularly transactions between the two, so that when the sort of press clause is used for other purposes, it's always a matter of concern. But one of the things that sort of struck me the most, and this was actually just as the book was being published, so this wasn't an example that appeared in the book at all, but that in late February, Elizabeth Warren, was on television. She's America's consumer watchdog in terms of the financing industry, saying that people still haven't recognized that the banking industry hasn't changed. We gave them $182 billion, and they have not changed their practices. And so, so here we are with that knowledge and information. And what I noted was that, okay, we gave them $182 billion. Elizabeth has assured us that nothing has changed. And here they are giving out $100 million in executive bonuses. And this is all in late February. And on the day that that happened, when you turned on the news or the radio or picked up a paper, you had wall-to-wall coverage of the Tiger Woods apology. You had whole large panels of people discussing things like whether he was sincere and whether Buddhism is better than Christianity and all of these crazy things. And it seemed like we were in another world, one that we shouldn't be in. When Eliot Spitzer, another good example, when he talked about the mortgage crisis and what was going on with these derivative packages and how we needed to take a look at what was going on and how innocent homeowners would be affected by it, I've got a research assistant now that I'd like to do some empirical things for me to just look at. Even the major papers, not even the tabloids, if you looked at sort of word for word what the coverage was on Eliot Spitzer, we probably got more, on his visit to some call girl in Jersey or wherever it was, than we actually got in terms of what he was saying and the warnings that he provided about the housing crisis. So it's sort of gotten out of hand.
You begin the book with the case of Princess Caroline of Monaco and begin a discussion about the difference between the system of protections in Europe versus the system of protections under the Constitution in the United States. And you make the point that privacy is a prerequisite for the formation of personal, political, and spiritual identities. But you also note that the concern in Europe is for dignity versus the concern in the United States for privacy. Can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. We hang our hat on the Bill of Rights. And the European Convention also has a Charter of Fundamental Rights. And wherein our First Amendment is, all about freedom of conscience. You've got freedom of speech, press, religion, assembly, the ability to petition the government for redress of grievances. You've got, sort of the whole of the liberty of conscience concept in our First Amendment. Theirs is a little more direct. They have a couple of articles where you are that would sort of primarily be looked at in a case involving defamation or privacy invasion in the EU. So that Article 8 says that everyone has the right to respect for his or her private and family life, for their home and for their correspondence. And then they've got Article 10. It says everyone has the right to free expression. But then there's a qualifier that says that also comes with certain duties and responsibilities, and that laws that govern free expression could be, in fact, subject to formalities, conditions, restrictions, or even penalties. And so there's not this sense in which, you know, we've got a hierarchy of rights, because in the United States, it is almost always the case where if anything, any other competing value or interest comes up against the First Amendment always trumps. And it's not that way in Europe, and they've got very sort of explicit guarantees for freedom, for respect, for family and home life. And it talks about respect for individual dignity.
You also raise the issue of the tendency today with the celebrity press, the tabloids, the cable television folks, that people want to become famous, and they go on television on these reality shows to become celebrities, but they probably don't understand what really goes along with that, even as they seek out information about other celebrities that already exist. And you talk about the difference between fame and celebrity and the transient nature of celebrity and how it's bestowed, particularly with fame. How do we then, within the context of what you're talking about, provide dignity for people in this country? How do we reconcile the difference between the two when the average citizen would really want to be famous?
Absolutely. And they would say that they really don't care if you want to chase them down the highway and hang outside of every venue with the camera snapping and so on and so forth, that first million to 5 to 10 million would certainly be worth it. And I've often wondered if we in fact went to Britney Spears and asked her in some of her darkest moments if she would have in fact traded it all or given it all back in order to have peace of mind, you know, what an honest answer would have actually looked like. Because they did. They chased her everywhere, and they didn't stop until she was being strapped to a gurney and taken to Cedars-Sinai Hospital. And during that period, they had on the cover of every magazine pictures of her babies with the most damaging headlines and quotes probably taken out of context. So it's sort of a three-prong attack. You've got the invasion of privacy that's mingled with the defamation of character, and the assault on familial dignity. And I think hers is a primary example, her and Tiger Woods. And so you've got this sense of, in which chasing her around and forcing her to justify every move and placing her under that level of scrutiny was an invasion of her privacy, and it really was an attack on her person, that there was no sort of daily outrage about the things that happened to her, I thought was also so very telling. And the way that we could get to a point where there was no real public outrage was to sort of massage things along and to give people the impression that it would really be worth their while if they would do it, to get on national television in front of a big audience and tell your deepest, darkest secrets and to be as outrageous and ridiculous as you can possibly be in order to have people talking about you. So we do. We've got this whole blogosphere and the social networks. And our younger people have no real conception of privacy and what it means, what the lack of privacy means, and how it, you know, can really damage people, damage families. And I think Tiger Woods' family is probably a pretty good example. It may, in fact, be newsworthy that he cheated on his wife, but he's certainly not in the club of one where that's concerned. And I would have preferred to have focused on what was going on with the banks and with the economy than to talk about Tiger Woods and his sincerity or not. It sort of strikes me as interesting that certain types of discussions never actually take place. So that, for example, if his wife had wanted to hold a press conference where she talked about the fact that she knew that he was cheating and didn't care, that would have never gotten aired. Same thing with John and Elizabeth Edwards, for example. I often tell my students, I said, you know, if she had ever decided to hold a press conference and say something like, you know, I just got back from the doctor and it's pretty clear now, I've only got 6 months to live, but I've met this woman and she seems actually pretty good for John. I know John better than anyone. So we've decided to have her and her daughter move in and to make the transition really easy on everybody and to get the kids acclimated and so forth because, you know, in 6 months I'll probably be gone. She would not have gotten that big sympathy jump and all of these things. And so for all of our discussion about sort of freedom of the press and expression and about what it means, it's not something that you really see in practice on any kind of regular basis. And for a public to sort of be manipulated into thinking that they have more of an interest in knowing whether or not Tiger Woods was sincere over what's happening in our banking industry and the economy is actually sort of scary.
You also provide some historical context by raising up the issues surrounding the McCarthy hearings in the 1950s and what that did to individuals who were called before the Committee on Un-American Activities. You recall the attacks against Jane Fonda during her protests of the Vietnam War, and also most currently the attacks on the Dixie Chicks after Natalie Maines' comment during a concert in London criticizing the president and the war in situation in Iraq. This still seems to go on over the years. Do you see any resolution on how this can, these seemingly competing agendas of freedom of speech and dignity and privacy for celebrities and by extension the general public, how can this be resolved?
I think that it's sort of important to recognize that right around the sort of mass protests, the civil rights and the anti-war movement, that we began to see a change in the law. In other words, originally the law said that people who held public office, whether they were elected or appointed, had to sort of, in an effort to give the First Amendment more breathing room, they had to be able to deal with a little bit of misinformation floating out about them. They always had an opportunity to call a press conference and set the record straight. That was extended to candidates for public office, and that made sense. Then it was extended to public figures. And so when you're talking about someone like Newt Gingrich, who is not currently an elected or appointed official, but, you know, trying to be or used to be kind of thing, and who's out there and talking about everything under the sun, then of course there's going to be misinformation about someone who has injected themselves that, you know, thoroughly into matters of sort of public concern. But when you've got an individual who's merely an athlete or a musician or an actor or an actress, unless and until they inject themselves, then they should have some measure of privacy. Now, the people that you named, Jane Fonda and the Dixie Chicks, and George Clooney, for example, and Brad Pitt and some of the things he's done, they do inject themselves, and so they are going to be, on that basis, subjected to a certain level of scrutiny. But whether or not Naomi Campbell is in Narcotics Anonymous, or, you know, who slept with who the other night and how many mistresses this one's had versus that one, those aren't the kinds of things that the Constitution was designed to, you know, sort of enhance or encourage. And it's a distraction. It moves the public away from the important issues, and it also introduces a level of confusion about what's actually in the public interest. So people don't seem to get the fact that it's none of their business and they really don't have an interest in knowing, or that, in fact, no one's really interested in your opinion about X, Y, or Z. If you and I were together talking about something, I wouldn't sit around asking your opinion about Mel Gibson and his, you know, whatever's going on with his girlfriend or his ex or whatever, not because it's not that there's certain aspects of it aren't a matter of public opinion, but that there is no sort of real or valuable information coming forth about that. So there's no basis for having any kind of meaningful discussion unless you just want to sort of pontificate about what it is you're hearing and seeing on the television. And it really does strike me as sort of a bunch of nonsense that's being blown up. And while that's happening, there are other seriously more important things happening in Washington and elsewhere that we need to pay attention to and that our kids need to be trained to pay attention to because it is their future.
Professor Robin Barnes of the UConn School of Law is the author of the book Outrageous Invasions, Celebrities, Private Lives, Media, and the Law, published by Oxford University Press. Thanks very much for spending time with us.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.